නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. As you all can remember, we were discussing Pottapada Sutta, which is available in the Digha Nikaya, Long Discourses of the Buddha, and we were going through it little by little. And if we recall what we have already discussed, basically Buddha went on Pindapatha, and at that time Buddha thought of having a little discussion with Pottapada and his group. They are wandering ascetics because Buddha has enough time to go on the alms round. And when Buddha approaches the place where Pottapada was residing, and they were discussing various unnecessary things, 32 topics that we already discussed, which are not suitable. So Pottapada actually want to make the whole crowd quite silent, because he appreciated Buddha's teachings, Buddha's presence, and therefore he invite others to become calm, quiet. And then Buddha approached there, and Buddha actually asked, "What is the thing that you all were discussing while I was coming there?" And then Pottapada mentioned, "It is not that important. By the way, I have a small question, important question to ask from you." And that has happened during a recent incident among various ascetics groups, while they were discussing about certain spiritual matters. So the problem they were discussing was how to gradually extinct or eradicate perceptions. And at that time, different people have given different answers. Some have mentioned that it is happening without any cause or condition, and therefore, when it happens, the person has a mind which is conscious and perceptible. And then, when it is leaving due to any reason, without any reason, then he become unconscious. And then another person has mentioned that it is not so. It is happening because of some mighty power coming from certain Brahmins who are with some psychic powers. They are inserting this perception to one's mind. When it is available, that person become conscious, and when it is not available, that person become unconscious. Then another person mentioned, "No, it is not so. There are mighty gods, celestial beings, who do that inserting part. When it is available, they become conscious. When it is not available, they become unconscious." And on other hand, certain others have mentioned different other ideas as well. And so while during that conversation going on, I was thinking about Bhante, about yourself, because I know you are a great teacher, and I felt that you could have given a better answer to this question. Now I am putting this question to you: how this gradual extinction of perceptions happen? Now Buddha is going to answer, and he immediately mentioned that if someone is telling perceptions arise and perceptions cease without any reason, then I deny that completely, because perceptions do arise due to reasons and conditions, and they do pass away or vanish due to causes and conditions. Now that is an important answer. Therefore we can understand, okay, this is kind of a causal reaction going on. And there Buddha mentioned, due to certain causes, certain perceptions arise. Due to certain causes, certain perceptions extinct or pass away. Now he is going to explain in detail what is the methodology that he is going to make use of in order to overcome these different perceptions. Now he started with morality. Now, on the other hand, we can reinterpret this question differently, because Buddha has mentioned in certain suttas, like in Kalahavivada Sutta, Buddha mentioned perceptions or signs, sanya, are the root cause of generating various mental proliferations. Now, mental proliferations, as we already discussed, is one of the many reasons that makes a lot of problems to a particular person. So whenever that person starts to think, and later he overthink and ultimately obsessed with thinking and overwhelmed by thinking. So this is what we call as proliferation. And at that time, he has simply become a victim of this very thinking. So then actually there are various unwholesome or even wholesome actions could happen, because this person is now under the influence of these mental proliferations. So that has become the root cause of various disputes, arguments, quarrels, wars, etc. in the whole world. Now, when we are asking the question that the gradual eradication of perceptions, on the other hand, we can interpret the question as gradual eradication of mental proliferations, because it is a result. So if one is able to overcome, or rather say reduce unnecessary, unuseful, harmful perceptions, and on the other hand to develop necessary or useful, beneficial perceptions, then on the other hand we can understand, okay, there is a eradication of unnecessary, harmful mental proliferations, and therefore calming down of the mind. Now, therefore, the Buddha's answer given for these perceptions are fairly valid for mental proliferations as well. So how to overcome mental proliferations and how to overcome various perceptions are go fairly parallelly. And here the Buddha is answering how to overcome perceptions, and there he started with the modality, sila. So there he is addressing a group which they are already renunciants. They are not the household people, they are already renunciants. So therefore Buddha explained in detail the whole Sramana life, or whole spiritual morality that undertakes by various groups that Buddha, or rather various monks whom that has gone undergone Buddha's teaching and the Buddha himself. Now here he starts with the Chula Sila, where certain basic rules are mentioned, precepts are mentioned, then leading on to Majjhima Sila, where certain other aspects are discussed, certain livelihood related matters. Then at the Mahasila, the great part, so even more explanations are given on the livelihood of a monk. Now after mentioning that, so then Buddha mentioned another section, that is actually the Indriya Sangvara Sila, or the guarding of the sense doors. Now we know there are mainly six sense doors. We already discussed these things in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. So there Buddha mentioned, so these sense doors are to be guarded. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and the mind are to be guarded, because otherwise different unskillful states, evil states, can arise in the mind. If we are using our senses without any care, previously unarisen greed or hatred can arise when we are not guarding the senses. So therefore Buddha mentioned one should guard one's senses, and while doing that he is not taking the signs, various characteristics of what he is perceiving. Now this is in a way sometimes we can call it as kind of a restraint, because even though we have healthy faculties, we are not going to overuse them, misuse them, rather we are using them carefully. And then Buddha went on explaining the result, mentioned that within himself the blameless bliss that comes from maintaining this Aryan guarding of the faculties. Now here we can understand, now when one is guarding the sense faculties, so his mind is well guarded, so he is not being polluted by various defilements, because he guards the senses. Now the mind is fairly protected because it is very much like he is maintaining kind of a fence, so that the purity of the mind is well protected. Because whatever the sense stimuli which are coming through the senses are ultimately causing the mind to get polluted. But when one is maintaining certain amount of restraint in the sense faculty, so that means that he is guarding the mind as well. So therefore, one can maintain the purity of the mind for a long time. So therefore, Buddha mentioned the blameless bliss is available due to that. Because the mind remains calmed. Mind remain fairly uninvolved. Mind remain fairly unattached. Because he is guarding the senses. Now say for example, if we are having some wealthy items, valuable items in a particular house, so probably we may be maintaining a fence as well, maybe a wall as well. If that wall is well protected, so then we can say the inhabitants as well as the wealth, valuables available in the house is also well protected. So similarly, mind is experiencing a fair amount of calmness, peacefulness, because the senses are well guarded. Now then Buddha mentioned another point, that is the mindfulness and clear awareness, sati sampajanya. Now here, mindfulness is very much practiced, not only in the formal way, maybe say breathing or any of those, rather here, what is emphasized is the daily maintenance of mindfulness. While doing various daily activities, one is maintaining mindfulness. Now here, actually, we can understand that the Buddha slowly brings us towards the concentration part, but rather than immediately telling anapanasati or any other meditation technique, he in general has mentioned guarding of senses. And then in general mentioned this mindfulness and clear comprehension. Now, when it comes to the commentary, the commentator mentioned four types of clear comprehension. So one is called gochara sampajanya, another one is asammoha sampajanya, then sappaya sampajanya, and the sattaka sampajanya. Sattaka sampajanya is what we say, that assume that you have to do something. There you are doing some sort of a reflection to check whether it is a useful act, whether it is something useful that you are going to do. It has some meaning. So then, if the result is yes, then you are going to implement. And on the other hand, sappaya sampajanya means you are again checking whether it is proper to do it. It is suitable, it is proper, it is appropriate to do. So that part is coming under the sappaya sampajanya. Then while doing the task, then you have to be mindful, you have to maintain the satipatthana, any of those four satipatthana. So that is the gochara sampajanya. Then asammoha sampajanya, so while doing the activity, where you are maintaining fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension, therefore you are not simply maintaining your attention only on the surface, but you have some penetrative wisdom so that you can understand some deep truths. So that is where the asammoha sampajanya. So we can see Buddha is sort of teaching us in a way how to manage ourselves, manage daily activities properly, understanding what we are doing is useful and it is appropriate, and while we are doing it, we are maintaining mindfulness, and again we are using some sort of penetrative wisdom. Now after mentioning clear comprehension, so then he mentioned the contentment. So this person is now fairly contented. So basically, when consider monks, they have four requisites: robes, food, shelter, and the medicine. So about those things, so this particular monk is fairly contented. he doesn't go after luxurious items. Rather, whatever he receives, he is satisfied. He is easy to maintain. So he maintains this kind of contentment. So with that, Buddha summarized, so this person has noble morality, this person has the noble restrainment of the faculties, and again, noble clear mind, clear comprehension, mindfulness and clear comprehension, and then the contentment. Now, after mentioning that, now if we go back to Pottapada, this section, now Buddha mentioned about the concentration side. Now already discussed about the morality part, Sila Sikha. Now he is coming to the Samadhi Sikha. Now when it comes to Samadhi Sikha, so we have to go back, because it is in the Pottapada Sutta, in this book, actually referred to the previous sutta to get the information. So that's why I am going back to Samanyapala Sutta. Now, after maintaining his proper clear comprehension, mindfulness, morality, sense restraint, contentment, now he is fairly suitable to further refine his attention. Now here, actually Buddha mentioned various defilements, particularly the five hindrances, how one can overcome five hindrances. And he has given very interesting similes to the five hindrances. The first simile is very much like someone has taken a loan. Suppose someone is taking a loan to develop his business, and somehow he worked hard and now he has succeeded. His business has prospered. By the way, I mean, when he was indebted, so he had a kind of a burden in the mind that I have to pay the installments, pay the whole sum which I have borrowed. So some sort of a burden is there. There is no freedom. And assume that Buddha mentioned here, so he worked hard and he was able to gain fair amount of profit, and now he was able to pay off the whole debt, whole loan, and ultimately he has something already available also to maintain, to support his wife and children. So therefore he now feels quite free. He now feels quite happy, because he is now free from the debt. He is free from the loan. So Buddha mentioned, if one's mind is free from kamachanda, sensual desire, so it is very much like one is free from a debt. Now we need to think why Buddha is taking this kind of a simile. When lust is available in the mind, when sensual desires are available in the mind. So Buddha mentioned it is very much like one is in debt. But when lust or greed or sensual desires are not available in the mind, free from the mind, so then it is very much like one has paid off the whole loan. One may feel lighter, one may feel free, not burdened. And then the second simile is for the ill will. So there Buddha mentioned, when a particular person is ill, suffering, terribly sick, so then he can't move properly, he can't move as he wish, he probably even bedridden, and there is no appetite, there is no the body strength, and so that kind of a terrible sickness is there, he is now undergoing. And assume now he is taking some medicine and meeting with the doctor. Now after some time he fully recovers. Now he takes back the body strength, and then the appetite, bodily strength. He is now quite well, and now he can move freely, and now he is fully recovered. Now Buddha mentioned, when one's mind is affected with ill will, so it is very much like someone is sick. His mind is not properly functioning, and he is very much sick. He is under the influence of a sickness. But when ill will is absent, ill will has faded away, then it is very much like one has fully recovered. Now you can understand the depth of the simile that Buddha is mentioning here. So having ill will in the mind, vyapada in the mind, is very much like a sickness. One is not having sort of proper mental state, rather the mind has become in a way a kind of a sick. But when ill will is not available, then it is very much like one is free from sickness. And then Buddha mentioned the tinamiddha, srotha and torpor, and the simile given is a kind of a prisoner. When one is in the prison, he can't move freely and he can't meet his friends or children or wife or whoever. So basically he is in the prison. And now Buddha mentioned somehow he is able to free from the prison. And after he is free from the prison, now he is free to move, free to walk, free to meet his friends. Now he feels free. So Buddha mentioned, when someone is under the influence of drowsiness, srotha and torpor, sleepiness, so it is very much like one is in the prison. You can't freely move. So you are under the influence of srotha and torpor. But when one is free from srotha and torpor, then it is very much like free from the prison. So we can see the prison is very much like a restricted dwelling place where you have no freedom at all. So Buddha mentioned this drowsiness, srotha and torpor, laziness. It is also like that. You can't move. You are stuck. You are in a prison. Now, the fourth one is the restlessness and regret, kama, this uddacca kukkuccha. The simile is given as a slave. When one is a slave, so he doesn't have freedom, he has to obey his master, and in completely dependent and on another person, and he is the one instructing, and we are simply a slave, and we have to simply obey the orders. And the orders are not something, desirable ones. Orders are always mostly, tiresome ones. So you have to work hard, you have to spend the night. It's very much like you are a slave. But Buddha mentioned that this particular slave is now has the opportunity, the fortune, to free from the slavery. Now he is an independent person. He is not dependent on any master. He doesn't have to obey to any master. Rather, he is a free person. Now he even reflect, while I was a slave, I didn't have any freedom. I have to obey my master. I worked as a servant, as a slave. But now it is not. Now I am free. So Buddha mentioned the restlessness and regret is very much like this, where when one is under the restlessness and when one's mind is regretting, so you are simply obeying it. You are very much like a slave. Mind is the defilements are the master, so we are very much like poor victims. So whatever the defilements are ordering, so we are under the influence of that. Say you have some bad memory, so again and again that worry is coming to the mind. You don't have energy to stop it, so again and again worrying. So even though probably sometimes you know that it is harmful, no, there is no use, it is already happened, I can't do anything now. Even though you can rationally understand it, still mind is under the influence of worrying, regretting. So it is very much like a slave. So you are under the influence of that worry. So, I mean, very difficult to move out. On the other hand, when the mind is restless, so it is jumping from this object to the other object, it is always moving, shaking, wandering. There is no any proper direction. So you don't have any kind of a say about yourself. Rather, mind is completely taken over. The defilements have taken over. The restlessness has taken over. So basically, we are acting like a slave. We are jumping from this to that because mind is in full control, fully under the influence of restlessness. So we are very much like a slave, jumping from this to that. So we can imagine how Buddha giving this simile fairly, I mean, is to understand, and again giving a very proper perspective about how the mind is influenced. And then the last simile Buddha gives here is about the doubt, vicikicca. Now that simile is also very interesting. So there is a particular person who is kind of a merchant. Now he has a lot of wealthy items, but with less food and less water maybe. And now he has to go through a desert area. Now, I mean, he doesn't know a proper path. Now, very much like in a perplexity. He has a lot of wealthy items. He doesn't know the proper path. And again, he is with scarce of food. And there are various dangers as well. Now, he is in a fully dangerous situation. He's in a desert. Now, assume that Buddha mentioned here, now he somehow reached a village. So, as he approached the village, as he know this is the village, then there is a lot of freedom in his mind, less burden, because he know now what is the direction. This is the direction I need to move. Now, this is the, I have reached the kind of oasis. I have moved, I have reached a village. Now I am free from danger. I don't need to look this end, that end, this direction, that direction, because now I know the direction. Now I know where to move. Now I know this is the village. So Buddha mentioned this doubt, vichikicca, is also like that. So when one is under the influence of vichikicca, doubt is very much like in a deserted area, doesn't know where to go. A lot of dangers are also there because if one's doubts overpower him, overwhelm him, probably his mind may get further conditioned, further perplexed, completely bewildered. And on the other hand, he doesn't know the path out also. I mean, he's completely doubtful. So, on the other hand, due to somehow, anyway, assume that he is free from doubt, free from vichikicca, then very much like he is fully relaxed, fully decided now, and fully aware now, okay, this is the thing to do. This is the proper answer. This is the proper solution. There is no doubt about it. Now, so all these five similes represent a kind of a freedom. Now, Kamachanda, the sensual desire, Buddha mentioned as kind of a person who is in debt. So when there is no sensual desire, he is free, very much like he is free from debt. Again, the freedom is highlighted. On the other hand, the ill will, very much like when a person is sick, terribly sick. So when there is no ill will, it is very much like he is free from sickness. Now he is free. He is free to re he is recovered. On the other hand, the sloth and torpor is very much like being in a prison, you have no freedom. But when there is no sloth and torpor, it is very much like you are free to move. You have your, so you can do your activities. You are not in a prison. You are free. Again, the freedom. Now, restlessness and regret, very much like you are like a slave. But when it is not present, you are free. You are no more a slave. You are no more a victim. You are free to do whatever you like. And on the other hand, when one is in a kind of a desert without knowing the path, so again, you are burdened, you are doubtful, you are maintaining a lot of issues. But when you know exactly, okay, this is the direction to move, this is the village, now I have reached the village, now you are feeling a lot of freedom. You are experiencing less burden. You are happy. Similarly, when mind is free from doubt, then you feel free. Because you know exactly, okay, this is the thing to do. So therefore, these similes are very interesting, which is Buddha given for five hindrances. And now, Buddha is explaining that he has now completely abandoned the hindrances. And as a result of that, gladness is arising in the mind. Because freedom is there, some kind of a freedom is available in the mind, certain gladness is arising, pamujja. And when fair amount of gladness is available, that leads to rapture. So when rapture arises, so then you feel tranquil from the body and the mind. The tranquility leads to the happiness of the body, comfort of the body. And that leads to the concentration. Pamujjam piti dayati piti manasya kāyopi passambati passadda kāyo sukhaṁ vedeti sukino cittaṁ samādhiti. So when the body feels comfortable, mind feels comfortable, then that easily caused the mind to become concentrated. Now mind become concentrated. Now here on the other hand, Buddha now explained about the first jhāna. And so first jhana, now we are going back to Pottapada Sutta, certain the deep aspects, the question that Pottapada asked, how to overcome various perceptions. Now Buddha is going to explain how certain perceptions are eradicated and how certain perceptions are arising due to practice. Now we are already very much discussing certain kind of a practice. One is practicing morality, one is practicing clear comprehension, mindfulness, one is practicing sense restraint, one is practicing kind of contentment. And on top of that, now one is practicing meditation. So that is where the hindrances are first explained. Now one is trying to answer these hindrances, to overcome these hindrances. How to overcome hindrances? So that is the interesting question that we need to ask. Now we discuss about this sloth and torpor. Now assume that one is practicing anapanasati. So when one is practicing anapanasati, so you have certain tasks to do. You have a duty to do. This breathing doesn't stop, it happens again and again. It is continuously happening. So you have an action to do, that you have to again and again look at this breath. Suppose it is the in-breath, so you have to be aware of this in-breath. Then immediately the next, the out-breath happens, so you have to be aware of that. Then the in-breath, again you have to be aware of that. Then again the out-breath, you have to be aware of that. Then again the in-breath, you have to be aware of that. So continuously, you have to do some activity here. So that is, again and again the breathing happens. It is not that you forcefully breathe, rather body does it. Automatically body does the breathing. So when it is happening, so you have to again and again apply your mind. So this is what we call as the applied mind, or the vitakka, where the breathing happens continuously again and again to each and every in-breath and out-breath, you have to apply your mind. So when you have that kind of a continuous task, then you can't have any kind of a drowsiness, because you have to be fully awake, you have to be fully active in order to do that successfully. So therefore we can understand, when mind is fully activated by this primary object, by again and again applying your mind to this primary object, there is no possibility of sloth and torpor to arise. So when the vitakka, applied mind, is fairly powerful, that means sloth and torpor is not present. So you are taking kind of a meditation object like breathing, rising and falling, or walking, which is continuous, and there is something that the mind has to again and again apply, what we call as the primary object. So that makes the mind fairly active, and as a result of that, drowsiness, sleepiness, sloth and torpor, laziness, all such factors may overcome. And then once that mind is applied to the object, so you are examining the object. What is there? Say for example, once you are applying the mind again and again to the breath, so you need to know whether it is longer, whether it is shorter, whether it is the beginning, the middle, the end. So likewise, you have to examine the object. So this examination part is what we call as the vichara. So that when you are doing it properly, you know exactly, okay, this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end. Okay, this breath is longer, this breath is shorter. This breath going from left nostril, this breath going out from right nostril. So likewise, you are quite sure about the process. There is no doubt about it. You are quite sure, okay, this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end. So that the possibility of arising vichikicca, doubt, is not there, because you are quite sure of what you are doing. So mind becomes free from doubt, vichikicca, when you are quite certain of what you are experiencing. So that is what we call vichara, the sustained thought, or the examining part, investigation. So that completely against the doubt, vichikicca. So the vichara is there to overcome vichikicca. And when you are doing it successfully, now everything is happening smoothly, you feel happy, because you have spent a fair amount of time to practice, and you spend a fair amount of strenuous practice maybe, and ultimately you are successful, and you feel quite happy because of this success. Now this happiness, this rapture, is completely against the ill will. You can't be happy and at the same time you can't be angry. Completely opposite. So when the mind is happy, when the mind is rapturous, therefore it is free from ill will. So piti, on the other hand, rapture, is completely against this ill will. And the body is comfortable, now the mind is also comfortable. So when the mind is comfortable, the present moment is comfortable, there is no need to go out. There is no need to go in search of happiness, because already the happiness is available. So if you consider why the mind is wandering, because it is looking for some kind of a happiness. Internally, if you don't have happiness, it is trying to find it externally. But now mind is internally happy, internally maybe calm, internally peaceful. Therefore, it doesn't have any reason to go out. So the restlessness and regret can't be available when the mind is internally happy, internally comfortable. So that what we call the sukha, the happiness, what you are enjoying, avoids the mind getting distracted. So now mind doesn't get distracted, because internally you are happy. So this sukha, happiness, is against the restlessness and worry. And on the other hand, When the mind is fully concentrated on the breath, it doesn't jump to anything else. When it is observing the beginning of the in-breath, it is fully aware of the beginning of the in-breath. The middle of the in-breath, he is fully aware of the middle of the in-breath. End of the in-breath, fully aware of the end of the in-breath. So likewise, mind is fully concentrated. So when mind is well concentrated like this, so it can't jump from one object to the other. I mean, jumping from one object to the other without being satisfied in the present moment is the representation of sensual desire. So when the mind is influenced by sensual desire, it can't stay in a particular object. It always looking after something more, something beautiful, something more satisfiable, something more enjoyable. So that is why again and again trying to find different objects. But when mind is fairly focused, concentrated on a particular object, that indicates that mind is free from sensual desire, kamachanda. So there is no more kamachanda, sensual desire. That's why it is fully concentrated on a particular object, say on the breath. Fully aware of the in-breath, fully aware of the out-breath, fully aware of the in-breath, fully aware of the out-breath. So likewise, continuously, it stays with the object because it is well concentrated. There is no sensual desire. So you can see these factors, vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata, applied mind, sustained mind, or the investigation, then the rapture, happiness, and the concentration. So these factors are completely against the five hindrances. So when one's mind is well equipped or strengthened with these five factors, so one can say one is able to overcome five hindrances. So when one's mind is able to overcome those five hindrances and strengthen those five concentration factors, vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata, so then we can say he is in the first jhana. Now, practically, on the other hand, assume that one is using anapanasati and again practicing anapanasati, and as a result of that, probably he may even experience the concentration sign, samadhi nimitta, and again now he is applying the mind to that. And as a result of that, his mind gets absorbed to that. Now one is, we can say, if the jhana factors are available, all five factors are available, then we can say he is in the first jhana. Now Buddha, now here give a very precise indication to Pottapada. Now because of all these practices, the sensual desire, ill will, Sotantopa, regret, restlessness, doubt, all these unnecessary perceptions are overcome. What is available now is the perception which is quite happy, delightful, and maybe even subtle. And that is because of the first jhana. So, whatever the lustful sensations, the perceptions available previously, now it is not there. But now mind is completely free from sensual desire. Whatever the ill will, that perceptions available previously is no more there. Now mind is equipped with the, kind of a rapture, kind of a happiness. Whatever drowsiness, sleepiness, available previously is not available now. Now mind is fully active. Whatever restlessness, regrets available previously is not available now. It has gone. Now mind is fully happy in a way, satisfied. And there are no perplexities, no doubts. Instead, mind is fully established. Now here Buddha mentioned, therefore, by means of the first jhana, when one attains the first jhana, That person is able to overcome fair amount of unnecessary perceptions. Now he has more refined perception, that is the rapture, maybe the concentration, happiness of this first jhana. That blissful perception available in the first jhana is what he is experiencing now. All those harmful perceptions previously available has abandoned. Now that is how Buddha mentioned how some perceptions arise due to training and some perceptions pass away due to training. So likewise, Buddha going to explain other parts as well. I think we can stop here for today. And with that, I like to conclude the Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Friends joining us for the first time, you may participate in the Q&A by raising your hand and or sending them via the chat. I'd like to invite Nalinka to ask the first question, please.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Venerable, I have a question. This was something that Venerable Dhammajiva mentioned. He said when you're looking at the breath, to try and find the gap
mm-hmm.
between the in and the out breath. Now, I have been looking at the breath. I can feel the in and the out breath. I can feel the temperature. If the mind goes out, I can bring it back in. But this gap, can you please mention more on this?
Yeah. So basically, now... Actually, before you come across the gap, you first of all have to establish mindfulness on in-breath and out-breath. So, okay, say you are successful in that. Say you are very aware of the in-breath, full aware of the out-breath. So, likewise, now fair amount of mindfulness is available. So, when mindfulness is available, now you are closely examining the breathing. So, assume now you are aware, okay, this is the beginning of the in-breath. This is very much the middle of the in-breath. This is very much the end of the in-breath. And maybe this is the beginning of the out-breath. This area is the middle of the out-breath. This area is the end of the out-breath. So likewise, you are now carefully examining the breathing because you are already established fair amount of mindfulness and already have fair amount of clear comprehension. You can clearly examine. So you already developed that skill. So as you are further continuing, probably you can experience, at the end of the in-breath, it doesn't immediately start the out-breath. It is going through a little kind of a gap. It's a kind of a space. So there is no any kind of a stimuli available, any kind of a sensation available. It's very much like an absence of anything. So that is the space that we are talking. So that space even can grow. At the beginning, it's very much like a shorter gap. But sometimes, as the breathing further calms down, it becomes more and more subtle. Then you probably even experience this space become even longer. Yeah.
So I just continue to look at the breath and...
Exactly. So actually, while you are carefully examining the breathing... Then only you may understand, okay, there's not only the breathing, there is a little gap as well. So it happens as your mindfulness and clear comprehension refines.
Okay. Thank you so much, Pandit.
Okay,
thank
okay.
Thank you. I'd like to invite
Chita
Devi for the next question, please.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhakti, you spoke about those four stages of sampajanya.
Yes.
Can you expand a little bit if you don't mind, please, Bhante?
Yeah. Actually, the first one we can call as the sattaka sampajanya, where sattaka means that you have, you know exactly this is something useful, something has some meaning. Say, assume that you are going to meet a friend. Now, before you are doing it, so you are reflecting. Is it really has a meaning of going there? So that is the kind of a reflection indicated in the Sattaka Sampajanya. So now, before you are doing it, you are doing such kind of a reflection. And even Buddha mentioned, while you are doing it also, you can do that reflection. And at the end of the activity also, you can do it. So basically, so we are checking, kind of reflecting, verifying, whether is there a proper meaning of it, what I am going to do. And then, next one is the Sappaya Sampajanya, which is very much like you are checking whether it is appropriate to me. I mean, is it the appropriate time? So is it better to go in the morning, or better to go in the afternoon or in the evening? Is it the appropriate time? Whether the friend would be there at home, whether it is not inconvenient to him. So likewise, you are checking the appropriateness of the task that you are going to do. So that is the, and again, it is suitable to you. So that is the Sappaya Sampajanya. And assume now you are doing it. So while you are doing it, now you have to maintain mindfulness of what you are doing. So that is the Gochara Sampajanya. Gochara means that you are dwelling in one of the four foundations of mindfulness. Either says if you are walking, then you can establish mindfulness in walking. While you are talking, you can establish mindfulness in talking. While you are, say, looking forward, looking backward, you are traveling, you are driving, and etc. So you have to maintain mindfulness. So all the activities now done well with mindfulness. So that is the Gochara Sampajanya. The last one is the Asammoha Sampajanya, where you are fully not just maintaining mindfulness on the surface, rather you are maintaining some sort of penetrative mindfulness, penetrative wisdom, and you are probably examining the whole thing carefully, deeply, so that fair amount of wisdom is possible to arise. Now, it is very much like in the meditation level. So you are examining your mind, examining whether are there any defilements arising, or you are talking or dealing with certain under the influence of certain defilements. You are basically maintaining fair amount of wisdom in the mind, equipped with wisdom. So that is the Asammoha Sampajanya, where your mind is well equipped with wisdom, not just sort of blindly acting, rather you are able to have certain amount of wisdom.
So from the very beginning, we are trying to not only be mindful, but we are also contemplating, because we want to know if whatever we are doing is appropriate, right?
Yeah.
So we are then being mindful first, then we are going a little bit deeper.
Yes.
And then we are even going more deep by trying to dwell in the four foundations of mindfulness, whether we are talking or walking or thinking. And then the fourth is really the wisdom part.
Yes, exactly.
So is that what we call Yoniso Manasikara? Would that be right?
Yes, yes. That? In the Asammoha Sampajanya, we can say represented in Yoniso Manasikara, because you are not simply dwelling in the surface on the outside appearance, rather you have some penetrative wisdom to examine this thing, I mean to understand the proper perspective.
So the first bit might be what can we call it, Sattasampajanya?
Sattaka. It's not.
But would it be the same like the first two or three? Would that fall into the category of Sattasampajanya?
No, actually these are the four stages or four facets of Sampajanya.
Sampajanya, okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you was, now you went through the five stages of the jhana, and then removing the five hindrances. So is it our aim then to, at some stage, maintain, be permanently deplete, permanently not having the five hindrances or trying to lose it?
Definitely. I mean, that is what we want to do, but we can't do it immediately. So what we do is we are using certain mechanisms, techniques to temporarily subside them. And
yes.
Once they are temporarily subsided, then the mind become concentrated. And free from ill will, free from sensual desire, free from sotantopa, free from doubt. And instead new factors are being introduced to the mind. So that is the vitakka vichara piti sukha ekaggata. So instead of five hindrances, now these five factors are strengthened. So these five factors, when they are present, they take care of not allowing the hindrances to arise.
Yes, so that is usually when we are meditating, that is a stage we are able to come into, but then when we go out into the world, we then can't maintain that.
Yeah, that is what happens at the beginning of the practice.
Yes.
Now, when one is
yes.
practicing, say, some of the meditation or any even vipassana, so I
yes.
mean, one is not yet developed enough to maintain that in the outside of the meditation. So once you are away from your cushion, probably you might encounter again these five hindrances. But on the other thing is, as you develop, now actually we haven't come to that level yet in the sutta, so as you are developing the practice, so the hindrances become raw material for your practice. So that is where once you are in the Dhammanupassana, so Nivaranapabba, so you are able to examine hindrances face to face.
So I think the Buddha encourages us to do it even when we encounter it in daily life. He's trying to encourage us to do that. Isn't that right? This clear comprehension about those four stages.
Sure, sure.
He's trying to encourage us to do it. Not only meditation, that's not difficult, I suppose, after
yeah.
a while, but then when we are encountering all these other things in daily life,
yeah.
he's encouraging us to do all this contemplation from a superficial to a deeper level.
Sure, sure, definitely.
Yeah, and that is the only way to develop wisdom, right?
Yeah. Yeah, actually it's kind of a multi-directional approach. So, restrainment is there, concentration is there, and the wisdom is there. So, and again, they are supporting each other. So,
yes.
many different ways actually Buddha is giving a solution, not just the meditation. So, morality part
yes.
also
yes.
is available. The concentration part is also available. And then the wisdom part is also available. As those all three are sort of fairly supporting and fairly developing, when one is progressing, so then you can face hindrances rather than sort of trying to get rid of them, rather than trying to escape
yeah.
from them. You
yeah.
you can recognize
yeah.
you can recognize the behavior of the hindrance. So that is why
yes.
when we reach Dhammanupassana, so Buddha mentioned, when the sensual desire is available, you are aware, okay, sensual desire is available. You are not afraid of it. You are not claiming it
yes.
as my sensual desire either.
No.
So it is just the sensual desire. And again,
yeah.
when it is not there, one is aware it is not there now. It is absent. And as you are further progressing, you can even understand the very first thought of sensual desire. There was no sensual desire available, but now there is a rising of sensual desire. And then there is a fading away of sensual desire. And once it is faded away, there is an absence of sensual desire for a while. So likewise, you can use sensual desire as a mechanism to even develop mindfulness and wisdom. Now it has become a raw material for your practice.
Yes, yes. Yes. So one has to be fairly advanced. You know, one can do all that during the day-to-day practice.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right, Pankaj?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when one reaches the possibility of doing it in daily activities,
uh-huh.
so always sort of vigilant and
yes.
Always aware of what is happening in your mind, so that indicates that He hasn't limited his practice only to sitting and walking, rather that the whole life is very much like a meditative experience.
Exactly. We have, that is a training as well, isn't
exactly.
it? Because as
exactly.
lay people, we don't have the training of the monks and nuns, so we have to try to implement it even in small small amounts at small periods of time, right?
Yes. Very true. Now that's why, I mean, say for example, you are traveling by a bus. So rather than simply look around and, allowing the mind to get distracted, so you can make use of that time to develop your practice. So how to guard your senses, how to even examine the mind. I mean, so if you are in the level of Dhammanupassana, how you are examining the mind? Or if you are simply trying to develop still the concentration, how you may be practicing breathing while doing that kind of traveling. So likewise, depending on where we are, probably we can make use of that opportunity for our practice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay. And I have written, so to everyone, I have written those four types of sampajanya in the chat, so you can look at it.
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
So, going back to, applying the clear comprehension in daily life, so I've experienced where I'm just watching one defilement after another arise,
mm-hmm.
and it just keeps going and going and going, and it actually causes quite a bit of suffering and anxiety, Bhante, because it just nonstop. But when that happens, and obviously there isn't enough equanimity to just watch them arise and pass away, and there is a bit of definitely a sense of these are my defilements that exist. So in that situation, Bhante, what do we do? Do we go back to maybe contemplating the body, something more gross? Do we like label it to, in a way use mind to, suppress the other defiled mind states? What is the best way to address?
Yeah. So basically, I mean, if you feel overwhelmed by so many thoughts, so many defilements, so that indicates, I mean, basically I have to calm down them. I have to reduce their frequency. And then probably we can go back to the sitting or walking, some sort of a formal practice, so that we are strengthening the wholesome aspect, the meditative qualities a little bit. And then again we are going back to the situation and we see whether we can manage. So very much like if our clarity of mind is not enough, then there could be a possibility of too many defilements are coming and ultimately we can't even handle. But later, I mean, if we found that situation, we can go back to our formal practice and little strengthen our practice. And again, we allow the mind to freely move. And probably you can handle. Now one thought is coming, you are able to recognize it. Another thought is coming, you are carefully able to recognize it. Another thought is coming, you are able to recognize it. So likewise, they are in a manageable level. So likewise, actually, we have to adjust our practice depending on the situation. Now, on the other hand, when we are discussing Bodhyanga, seven enlightenment factors, if you can remember, so when mind is restless, when mind has agitated, then Buddha mentioned, develop certain group of enlightenment factors which are conducive to calm the mind, tranquilize the mind. So that is the tranquility, concentration and equanimity. So those are the three factors we need to develop when mind is too much restlessness, too much sort of jumping and too many thoughts. So then actually we have to calm down. And assume that you feel lethargic, you feel boredom, and you feel sort of lazy. So that is the opposite of the practice. So there you have to further activate the mind, you have to arouse energy. There Buddha mentioned, now you better examine the situation, you better again and again apply the mind to a particular object which is frequently happening, so that you arouse energy. So that other group of enlightenment factors are to be developed. So the mindfulness is the one monitoring the whole process and telling you, okay, this side has to be activated, this side has to be subsided. This side has to be activated, this side has to be subsided. So likewise, mindfulness is doing this full supervision part, monitoring part, and indicate us what to do.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
So actually these things practically may happen, because I mean, we can't say every day and every time our mind behave the same way. As it is changing, we have to make use of different teachings, different techniques to balance the mind.
Yeah, so that happened to me when I was actually doing walking meditation, and I was observing so many defilements coming one after another. So
yeah.
In that sense, based on what you just said, Bhante, I needed to apply much more concentration and tranquility. So I should just stop my walking meditation and maybe just do, a little bit of anapanasati, for example.
Only a little bit, by the way. I mean, one advantage is here, Jennifer, now when they are coming, so you are in a way in the full battle. Now you have, in other terms, you have very good opportunity to overcome them, to handle them properly. But if you feel, I'm still a little not confident on handling them, then probably you can go back to anapanasati or walking, whatever it is, and to little strengthen your faculties. And again, you have to, if you are strengthening them too much, then these defilements may not come. So that is also kind of a disadvantage from the vipassana point of view. Because vipassana point of view, when you have a lot of, these kind of defilements, so that means that you have something to do. You are fully active, you are fully in the battlefield.
Okay, so
yeah.
Bhante, when you say properly handle them, that means just being able to wash them with an equanimous mind.
Exactly.
Right? And not
yes.
be aroused by them. Okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, I think there seems no any other question. Anyone has any other question? Okay, so then we...
There's nothing to
chat. Okay, then we can wind up the session. Okay, someone else is also there. Yeah.
Rohini, you may ask your question now.
Venerable Bhante.
Yes.
I'm Rohini Shilmata. I just want. I was lost connection for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So can I please ask again to shortly or briefly discuss about the four kind of sampajanya, please?
Yeah. So I have written them in the in the
yes,
chat.
Yes, I got it. I got it.
Okay.
Just briefly, the sapaya and gochara sampajanya, please.
Yeah. So sattaka means that we are verifying whether what I am going to do has proper meaning. It is a meaningful activity that I am going to do. So that is what the very first one, sattaka sampajanya. Sappaya means I am checking whether it is appropriate for me, it is suitable for me. I am at this age, I am a monk, I am a nun, is it suitable for me? I am going in the morning, is it suitable? Is it the proper time? I am going to meet a particular person, is the suitable time for him? So likewise, you are checking the suitability. The gochara means that while you are engaged in the activity, you are doing it mindfully. Among the four foundations of mindfulness, any of the foundation of mindfulness I have to make use of while I am doing the activity. So that is the gochara sampajanya. Then the asammoha sampajanya is where I am using some penetrative approach rather than simply doing kind of a surveillance in the top. So I am make use of the opportunity to develop wisdom, and if possible, to kind of carefully analyzing the situation and trying to arouse wisdom and seeing what is going on. So basically not allowing the mind to get deluded, rather maintaining wisdom.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, then we'll wind up the session. So we were able to discuss Pottapada Sutta and again discuss a few other practice related matters. So with that, actually, we were able to accumulate some merits. We share these merits with all the past living relatives, with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits also help us to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattaja bummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattaja bummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattaja bummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Nimina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Nimina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante. Therivan
Sannai. Yeah, Therivan Sannai. I have a small announcement, but by the way, I forgot to mention. There are the one group, actually several groups from Australia, they are organizing a retreat. So it is in Sinhala medium, starting with 15th and going on till 18th. It's a 4-day retreat, and probably if you are interested, you can join with that starting on 15th at 8:30 a.m. Sri Lanka time. Okay, Therivan Sannai.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah, Therivan Sannai.
Sorry, do you have the Zoom information that I can send out to everyone on the call today?
Yeah, sure, sure. I can send it to you.